As you're eating your lunch, we're getting started just a little bit late. Without anyone choking on their food, we didn't have a blessing on the food yet. Maybe we just assumed that you all said your prayers this morning in light of the fact that you're in the middle of your eating. But I do want to introduce our speaker today, John Taylor, who is from the Public Affairs Department at The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. John is in public relations and marketing. He has quite a bit of expertise in that field. He has worked earlier as in that field for Intermountain Healthcare, among others, and he has been involved in interfaith relations, and that's where his special responsibility is with the Public Affairs Department of the church. John has also served as a mission president in Monterrey, Mexico. He is currently serving, newly called, as a stake president in the Draper area, and he has 4 children and 6 grandchildren. We're grateful to welcome John Taylor with us today and look forward to his presentation.
Okay, I've been told to turn the microphone on. It's a pleasure to be with you this afternoon, and I just want to take a second and express my appreciation to the organizers of this conference. I think of Dr. Cole Durham and Robert Smith and Dean Rasband and so many who have been supportive of this effort and who have worked so hard to organize it. Won't you join me just in a round of applause to thank them for this wonderful conference? You know, we thought it might be interesting for you today to take a little bit of time and tell you about the activities of a church delegation that went to the Vatican in November of last year. The delegation was invited by the Vatican to attend a summit, and the title of that summit was Humanum, the Complementarity of Man and Woman. And you might ask, how is it possible that the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints would be asked to participate in such an event? And I thought it might be interesting for you to just hear a little bit of the background of how this all came about. It really started a number of years ago with some efforts on the part of a number of our church leaders, including Elder Ballard, who started to develop a very strong working relationship with Catholic leadership here in this country. And there was a particular a friendship that was developed through many of the leaders of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops back in Washington, D.C. And Elder Ballard and Elder Cook and a number of others were invited to go back to the U.S. Conference and to meet a number of those leaders. It wasn't long after that Elder Ballard, Elder Cook, and Elder Tingey received an invitation to come to New York in 2008 when Pope Benedict XVI visited New York, and representatives from our church, as I mentioned, Elder Ballard, Elder Cook, and Elder Tingey, attended a Christian ecumenical prayer service with the Pope at that time. The theme of his discussion was Christ, our hope for unity. And that really started a process where doors started to open and some very strong working relationships on various issues, including religious freedom, including marriage, and others were started. I thought it might be interesting for you just to know about some of those relationships. Michael von Rosen and I, in our presentation on Monday, talked a little bit about this. But one of the people that was very influential and helpful in that process was Archbishop John Wester, who was the bishop of the Archdiocese of Salt Lake here in Utah, and was recently asked to be the Archbishop of New Mexico, and just left a few weeks ago to take that position. But there was just a very warm and cordial relationship that was developed, particularly with Elder Ballard, when Bishop Wester came to Salt Lake. Bishop Wester and Elder Ballard share a love of golf, and they became golfing friends. And it was kind of interesting to hear about some of those golfing outings that they took. But again, just a wonderful relationship. And that in turn helped develop some additional relationships with significant members of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. That included Cardinal Corleone, who at the time was in Oakland. He was Bishop of Oakland, and then now is Archbishop in San Francisco. Cardinal Timothy Dolan. And it's interesting because Cardinal Dolan became very fast friends with Elder Perry. And I mentioned in our session the other day when Elder Perry passed away a few weeks ago, we sent out some notices to those religious leaders that have been so close to Elder Perry. And we sent that notice out. Elder Perry had passed away about 3, and I think about 5 we were sending that information out. And about an hour and a half later, my phone rings, and it was Cardinal Dolan calling. And he said, we'll send the letters. But he said, I just personally wanted to call, and will you pass on to the leadership of the church and also to Sister Perry how devastated we are to hear of his passing. He said he was a dear friend. And he said, you know, I called him Brother Tom. And I said back to Cardinal Dolan, I said, you know, Cardinal Dolan, he called you Brother Tim. And of course, then we had that wonderful Irish Catholic laugh that came from Cardinal Dolan. But these were the kinds of relationships that were being formed over time. There was another very close relationship with Elder Perry and other leaders that were developed with Archbishop Joseph Kurtz. Cardinal Dolan had been the past president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, and Archbishop Kurtz is the current president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. So there have been many meetings and relationships that have been developed. Another individual in Catholic leadership that's been very influential has been Archbishop William Laurie out of Baltimore. He has a number of special assignments as it relates to religious freedom within the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, and he also has been a very influential leader in this effort and a good friend of the church. Last year, there was a special visit by Elder Christofferson that was made to Cardinal Sean O'Malley of Boston, and actually had the opportunity of going there to the parish where a special dinner was held between Cardinal O'Malley and also Elder Christofferson. And again, once again, a magnificent relationship that has been built with our Catholic friends. So this was part of the process that was going on and continues to this day. But through those relationships, during the early months of 2004, there were some communications that were taking place from several senior Catholic leaders, both here in the United States and also from the Vatican in Rome, about organizing a summit in Rome where different faiths who shared common views on marriage from throughout the world would come together and start to build a framework where we could unite and work on a common cause and a common vision. This was a new endeavor for the Vatican. They really hadn't quite done anything like this before. And there were some significant faith leaders here in the United States that were asked to participate in this conference. I might mention one other individual that's been a good friend of the church is Archbishop Chaput, who is the Archbishop of Philadelphia. He was actually over in Denver for many years. Thought he would retire in Denver. It's kind of like our leaders. Sometimes new assignments and new calls come, and he ended up back in Philadelphia. By the way, he's going to be responsible for the conference on the family. He is responsible for that conference that's going to be held in September back in Philadelphia, which will include a visit from the Pope. I'll tell you about that in a few minutes. He's also been a dear friend and been very influential as we've worked together. And a number of these leaders have come to Salt Lake, have come to BYU actually, and have spoken at the Faith, Family, and Society lecture series that has been very helpful here at BYU. So let's talk just about some of the other faith leaders that were invited to be involved in this conference. There is Dr. Russell Moore, who is the president of the Southern Baptist Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission. And he visited Salt Lake, by the way, in December. Was hosted here, actually attended the Christmas concert for the Tabernacle Choir when he was here. Governor Mike Leavitt's been a good friend of his and a great ally. Brian Brown, who's the president of the National Organization for Marriage. Probably recognize this gentleman, Rick Warren, who is president or who's the senior pastor for Saddleback Church, Southern California. Dr. Jackie Rivers, who has been a wonderful ally and good friend and is partnering with us on a number of religious freedom efforts. She is Harvard educated, trained. She just received her doctorate degree from Harvard, and just a significant voice with she and her husband, Dr. Gene Rivers, Reverend Gene Rivers, also again from the Boston area, also Harvard educated and trained. And they have been a significant force in really creating relationships with many of the different families and branches of the black churches that have a significant interest in religious freedom. Rabbi Meir Soloveitchik, he's a leading Jewish academic and has become a very good ally and friend of the church, actually sits on the board of the Beckett Fund. He was invited to participate, and Dr. Robert George of Princeton, who also has been a very good ally and friend of the church. So these were some of the people that were part of that discussion. And ultimately, what happened is there was a formal invitation that was then extended from the Vatican, and it was sent to the First Presidency. And President Eyring was given the assignment, asked to attend and to speak at the conference. And to my knowledge, we've had visitors to the Vatican, but this was the first time where a leading leading leader of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints was asked to actually speak and participate in a conference, in a summit like this. Elder Perry and Sister Perry and Bishop Cossey and Sister Cossey were asked to attend the colloquium, also as part of the church's delegation. And again, this was really a culmination of years of work and relationship building. And from my perspective, it was historic. It was really something to see this all come together. So over the coming months, there was a great deal of work and preparation put into this visit. And I know I can tell you that President Eyring spent a considerable amount of time developing and pondering and thinking about what he should say. Yes, they asked him to participate and be a witness at the conference. He was asked to take about 15 minutes in the conference and witness for the many of those leaders that were there. So, starting on November the 15th, the delegation traveled to Rome, and the colloquium would host over 300 international leaders from different faiths. And in arriving on Sunday morning, we'll just give you a little bit of the background before the colloquium started. President Eyring and Elder Perry and Bishop Cosset, their wives attended the Rome First Ward there in Italy. Now, if you don't think that was something to watch that bishop as these leaders walked in, and it was quite an event because the three speakers were Bishop Cosset, Elder Perry, and President Eyring for their sacrament meeting. And it was just a wonderful experience, and to see the enthusiasm and the love of our wonderful Italian members, it was just really quite remarkable. Following that, there was a trip over to the Rome Temple site. And again, before the colloquium started, I don't know how much you know about that site, but there's actually three fairly good-sized buildings, edifices that are going on that site. One, of course, is the temple. The other is a location where patrons of the temple can stay, offices, administrative offices for the church. And then there's also a beautiful visitor center that's being built. And so it was kind of a rainy day, but we had the opportunity of touring that beautiful site. As these leaders walked through that site, we walked over to the visitor center. The visitor center has a beautiful rotunda, and in the center of that rotunda is going to be a Christus, but then around the edge are going to be beautiful statues of each one of the apostles. And this is the one of Peter that will be placed in that rotunda. So that was Sunday. The colloquium started, of course, the next day on Monday at the Vatican. And it was quite an experience to go over and witness for many this historic event. As I said, more than 300 religious leaders from throughout the world gathered in what is called Synod Hall at the Vatican, and it's the home of many important meetings that take place for the Catholic Church there at the Vatican, including the College of the Cardinals. This was led by some significant leadership within the Catholic Church. Cardinal Mueller was one of those. He's the prefect of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. It's his responsibility within the Vatican. And he was the one that had proposed and actually received approval from the Vatican to go ahead and hold this colloquium, this conference. Each session began and was hosted by a different cardinal from the Vatican. Let me just tell you a little bit about how this started as we arrived. It's a large, very large auditorium. I'm sure you've seen pictures of it. But as we arrived, we walked in, and there was one of the priests that had helped organize this event, and he immediately recognized President Eyring. He said, "President Eyring, would you please follow me? We have a special place for you to sit." So we took him right down to the front row of that auditorium, right in the center, and asked if he would sit there and be there, remain there for the 3 days. The respect and the graciousness that was offered by the Vatican and our friends, our Catholic friends, for me was humbling. It was just exceptional. And we had been told, again, that the Pope Francis would be making introductory remarks, and so Cardinal Mueller began, the Synod called it to order, and then shortly after that, Pope Francis was escorted into the hall, and he greeted and then gave some introductory remarks to start off this colloquium. What I'd like to do now is I'd like to play you just a little snippet, It's in Italian, but there are subtitles. So we've kind of kept the sound down on the Italian, except for those that speak Italian. So that you can kind of get a feel for what he was saying. And I think as we came through this, so many times in these issues and in these battles and in these challenges that we face, we feel like we're alone. And I think the one thing that everybody took away from this conference is we are not alone. And there are many faiths that feel the same way we do. We may have doctrinal differences, significant doctrinal differences, but on this issue of marriage, there is an awful lot of unity throughout the world. So let's just play this little piece.
Complementarità assume molte forme poiché ogni uomo e ogni donna apporta il proprio contributo personale al matrimonio e all'educazione dei figli. La tua ragione, nell'esortazione apostolica Evangelii Gaudium, ho posto l'accento sul contributo indispensabile del matrimonio alla società, contributo che supera il livello dell'emotività e delle necessità contingenti della coppia. È importante che essi non si lasciano coinvolgere dalla mentalità dannosa del provvisorio e siano rivoluzionari per il coraggio di cercare un amore forte e duraturo.
This was typical of what he discussed in his opening remarks, and I think there was a genuine unity that started right off from his remarks. And we'd been told that after his remarks, there may be a possibility that he may greet just a few of the leaders there. We didn't know how that was going to work. But it was interesting because once again, he came down from the podium and greeted about six or seven of the key religious leaders that were there. And the third leader he greeted was President Eyring. Again, showing the respect and the admiration that took place. He clearly knew of the church and knew of the things that we had been doing, because as he greeted very warmly President Eyring, and you can see that in that photo, he expressed thanks for the dedication and the commitment of the church as it related to traditional marriage. And I know that President Eyring was very touched by that genuine expression of gratitude by the Pope. And again, the respect and the admiration, the generosity that was shown by our Catholic brothers and sisters at that colloquium was quite amazing. As part of this colloquium, it was each session, and there were six different sessions. Each session was started with a special video presentation. And these were created again by the Vatican, shot and produced by the Vatican. And I'd just like to show you quickly one of the segments that gives you a feel for the kinds of messages that were portrayed as each one of these sessions started at the colloquium.
Motherhood has traditionally been seen as the nurturing genius, where a space is created where a person is allowed to be, which is so much at the heart of the flourishing of a person, simply to be allowed to be accepted unconditionally and received as he or she is. So we often speak of the mother as the heart of the family. And then the masculine genius, the gift of the man, is he can become father. Masculinity gives the capacity for the father to be, in a unique way, the solid structure within which a person can flourish. You could say the scaffolding for all of life, a kind of security that the world is a safe place. Father provides a kind of compass for the conscience of the child. It begins to show the child that they have to direct their whole life according to the benevolent laws and the moral structure of the universe.
again, six beautiful videos. We've been involved with Humanum in doing some editing and working on making these more widely available through social media. And you'll be seeing more of that as we get closer to the conference in September, the Philadelphia conference. But you can see these at the Vatican website. I think it is Humanum. And also, there are some links, if I'm not mistaken, through our church websites also. Beautiful presentations. Each one of those videos ran about 12 to 14 minutes. Now, it's interesting to see the other influences that took place at that conference. There were a number of panel discussions. Our very own Lynn Wardell, Wardle was represented there. He attended from the BYU Law School, and he participated in a Monday afternoon panel discussion. And during his discussion, he spent quite a bit of time talking about the family, a proclamation to the world. And we found it interesting because there were numerous times when the proclamation was referenced. I can remember sitting there, and Elder Perry and Sister Perry and of course, President Eyring was down front, but Bishop Cosse and Sister Cosse were there, and there was an academic from Iran that spoke for a few minutes, and suddenly he read about two or three paragraphs from our proclamation from the family. And I can just remember doing one of these and looking down, and they looked back at me, and we recognized that it was a pretty good source of information that was being used in that. We'll share a little bit about some of the things that President Eyring also said during his presentation. This was a veritable who's who of many different faith leaders. Many of you have probably heard of Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks, the retired chief rabbi of the Commonwealth. Let me just share a couple comments that he made. For any society, the family is the crucible of its future, and for the sake of our children's future, we must be its defenders. He went on to say, our compassion for those who choose to live differently should not inhibit us from being advocates for the single most humanizing institution in our history. Dr. Jackie Rivers, once again director of Harvard Seymour Institute for Black Church Studies, said the following. God has called us to a global movement to promote the correct definition of marriage. God our Father brought us to this place, this day, to join in unity across faiths and around the world to defend his divine plan for marriage. And then Tuesday afternoon came, and it was President Eyring's opportunity to address the colloquium. Most of the presentations at the colloquium were fairly academic in nature. But from our point of view, and I know President Eyring felt very strongly about this. He felt like there was a need to very much bring a personal view to his remarks. And so he talked with emotion about the way he felt the first time he met his wife, his sweetheart. And he talked about the eternal nature of temple marriage. These were concepts that were a little unique to the discussion. And how he and his wife grew in their relationship and brought the best to their marriage and their family. He shared how Sister Eyring inspired him to be a better person. And then he quoted extensively from the proclamation of the family, a proclamation to the world. It was interesting. As we looked around the room, we started to hear a few sniffles. And then we started to see tissues come out. And we saw dabbing of eyes. And we saw a prophet, seer, and revelator addressing a group of people of faith. And I can tell you that they felt. And as we close, we'll show you a little clip. Not as we close, but as part of this, we'll show you a little clip. I want you to listen carefully to what he says, because he testifies of who he represents. and what his purpose is. He was courageous and extremely strong in that presentation, and people could feel it. So let's just show you just a quick little world report that talks a little bit about his presentation and the reaction of others, particularly Elder Perry and Bishop Cosay, as they watched him. Oh, I'm going to go back.
I am an eyewitness of the power of the union of a man and a woman in marriage to produce happiness for each other and for their family.
So began President Henry B. Eyring's heartfelt address before an international body of religious leaders on day two of the Vatican Summit, reaffirming the universal embrace of marriage.
We must find ways to lead people to a faith that they can replace their natural self-interest with deep and lasting feelings of charity and benevolence. With that change, and only then, will people be able to make the hourly, unselfish sacrifices necessary for a happy marriage and family life, and to do it with a smile.
President Eyring was joined at the Vatican Summit by L. Tom Perry of the 12 and Bishop Gerald Cosay of the Presiding Bishopric. Each of them were moved by the opportunities to share at this unique interfaith conference.
It is totally universal. I was very interested to talk with many people from different nations, from all the continents of the earth.
I want to see a religious revival come out of this, where the pulpits of America and throughout the world are blazing with the benefits of marriage and the value of family units.
President Eyring's remarks at the summit weave together the personal aspects of his 52-year marriage, highlighted by the impact of the Latter-day Saint proclamation to the family, and offered an ecclesiastical leader's prescription for love at home and in marriage, based on his own profound experiences of family life.
I thought she was closer to God than anybody I'd ever seen. I thought if I'd get close to her, then I would get closer to God. We have been complimentary beyond anything I could have imagined. Her capacity to nurture others grew in me as we became one.
Great power. He was at his best today, and the message was just perfect for that particular time, because it brought it back to the message that we needed to hear from this congregation that's gathered, and he just put it in the right words.
Those little signs that are in families. Families can be forever. That's the optimism that I came away with, and that's what's universal across the continents, a desire to somehow perpetuate families forever. I don't think many people believe that it's possible, but we do.
Others saying about his witness. Of his witness, Maggie Gallagher, a devout Catholic and voice for traditional marriage, wrote the following in a National Review article. There was a catch in his voice, and I wondered about it, the hidden story behind the almost tears, as he said, "Most remarkable to me has been the fulfillment of the hope I felt the day I met my wife. I have become a better person as I have loved and lived with her. At that moment, I knew this is what I want for my sons, that they find the woman who will make them want and give them power to be a better man. This is also the kind of woman I want to be." Many of you, I'm sure, heard of Pastor Rick Warren. Pastor Warren spoke just before President Eyring's witness. And following that event, Rick Warren came up after President Eyring had finished at the break, and with tears in his eyes, said to President Eyring, I need to be better to my wife. And when I go home, I am committing to do that. This was, once again, those were the remarks of Maggie Gallagher. Cardinal Turan is the president of the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue for the Vatican. And during this visit, there were about 12 or 13 additional meetings, side meetings, that were organized and put together with President Eyring and with Elder Perry and with Bishop Cosse, so that they could meet many of these leaders. And so we had a private meeting with Cardinal Turan, who's very influential within the Vatican. And Bishop Cosse had actually worked a little bit with him as we were getting approvals for the Rome Temple. He's suffering from Parkinson's disease, but he still made time to meet with us. And the warmness of the greeting was really quite remarkable. And I can still remember the first question that he asked. He says, "Tell me about your temple and how it's progressing. We want to be supportive." And then he took another almost hour to tell us about religious freedom issues in many parts of the world and the way the Catholic Church, the Vatican, was engaged in those efforts. Just remarkable. At another meeting with Archbishop Charles Chaput, who is the Archbishop of Philadelphia, we talked about the World Meeting of Families, which will be convened in Philadelphia by Catholics on September 22nd and 27th of this year. The conference itself is expected to attract about 20,000 individuals, and there are going to be over 1 million people that will be in attendance for the Mass with the Pope, which is scheduled for that Sunday. And it's interesting, again, a senior representative of the church has been asked to come and present at that conference. And so Elder Christofferson has been asked to go and speak on the things that we have learned to strengthen Mormon families. And so he will be participating in that in a few weeks. I think I mentioned that Archbishop Chaput came to Salt Lake, met with leaders of the church in January, and also spoke down here at BYU. Let's talk just for a minute about the media coverage. We took a very small group over, very small group of folks to help us with that. Lyman Kirkham here from our, Kirkland from our staff was one of those. And as we worked through these things with the Vatican, they were amazed at what they saw happening. We were getting feeds, we were putting together pieces, sending all of this back so that the press could use it throughout the country. There were very few actually press credentials that were given to the event. But we were able to get, like I said, a very small group, just two or three, into the colloquium to cover this. And just to give you an idea, within the first day or so, 1.7 million people had shared the picture of the Pope and President Eyring. And the person that was responsible for all of the press pooling and press relations for the Vatican came up to me and said, "What is going on? We cannot figure this out. You're being 12 times more successful than we are in getting this information out." And suddenly Lyman became a rock star, and the Vatican just loved him. They just couldn't believe it. The news coverage included over 65 different news stories. There were 70 minutes of broadcast runtime from those stories, and 2.6 million reach from church media websites, just from our church media websites. Let me share just a couple of the comments that came through our social media efforts. As a Catholic who has a friend who is LDS, this makes me very happy. Yes, we have differences, some big, but we love the same God. Very wonderful to see that church leaders of all faiths from around the globe have gathered to discuss the absolute critical and essential need of preserving traditional marriage and keeping God's commandments. Well, just a few additional observations from this visit to the Vatican. I think everyone was pleased to meet so many leaders from different faiths, Christians, Muslims, Hindus, Sikhs, who agree that our position, who agree with our position on traditional marriage. We come from very different doctrinal perspectives, as I've mentioned, but we all come together in our efforts to preserve this critical role, the critical role of traditional marriage in our society. The other component of this that we were very pleased with was just the remarkable reception by the Vatican and their willingness to meet with President Eyring and other leaders of our church. I think the other component is we were very impressed with the tone of the colloquium, and particularly with the Catholic leaders present. They were authentic, they were human, and they took a very simple approach. And we do believe that we will be able to join together in the future on many more common issues. Overall, I do believe that it was historic for the church. And so, in closing, what I'd like to do is just show you another little video that was put together. And I would call this President Eyring, in his own words, taken directly from his presentation at the colloquium.
I am grateful to be invited to be a witness at this colloquium. I am especially grateful for the opportunity to give evidence that a man and a woman united in marriage have a transcendent power to create happiness for themselves, for their family, and for the people around them. The evidence I offer begins when I was a single man. I thought I was happy. An assignment in my church took me to a meeting in New Hampshire. As the meeting ended, I saw in the crowd a young woman. I had never seen her before, but the feeling came over me, if I could only be with her, I could become every good thing I ever wanted to be. We were married a year after I first saw her. The words spoken in the ceremony included a promise that we might be husband and wife in this life and for eternity. I have become a better person as I have loved and lived with her. We have been complementary beyond anything I could have imagined. Our unique abilities allowed us to become partners with God in creating human life. Spouses and family members can lift each other and ascend together if they care about the interests of the other more than they care of their own. Those are things people must do for us to have a renaissance of happy marriages and productive families, even when the happy result is slow to come. And when loud voices mock the effort, we can and must stand up and defend the institution of marriage between a man and a woman. The Lord will multiply our efforts as we join together in this work. I promise progress toward that happy result, and I do it in the name of Jesus Christ, whom I serve and whose witness I am. Amen.
again, that's an overview of what took place. And just in closing, I just want to say, never doubt the influence that each and every one of you can have on these critical and important issues. We're grateful that you've come and attended this. We're grateful for your commitment to this important cause, for taking time out of your very busy schedules to be here. Again, thank you for your time.